Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I explore the leading edge of consciousness and how we're evolving as a collective civilization. And one of the major things I feel that are impacting on us are the signs and symbols in the crops, crop circles. And I have one of the world's leading researchers with us tonight, Nancy Talbert, and she has some very exciting news. Well, I'll just mention it, that there's been crop circles found in snow just recently in Holland. And let's talk about it, Nancy. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Alan. And I would like to say also, just before we get started, I think that Robert is trying to listen in from Holland, where it is 4 o'clock in the morning now. But if you're there, Robert, hi.
Well, let's explain who Robert is, because all your recent research at BLT Research, and they are, I feel, the premier research team investigating crop circles, has been focused on this guy in Holland, Robert Vandenbroek.
It's an opportunity for me to tie in the crop circle phenomenon to many of the other things that you're interested in, Alan, and other people, you know, lots of other people are too, because through the case, this case in Holland, it's Robert Vandenbroek is his name, I have observed and witnessed and am beginning to learn that many anomalous phenomena that we, you and many, many other people, have labeled as separate situations. For instance, out-of-body experiences, or remote viewing, or UFO encounters, or poltergeist events. All of these things, which we have, up until this point anyhow, pretty much labeled as if they were totally separate, independent events, are, through my study of this young man in Holland, more and more appearing to be bits and pieces of the same unknown.
The same unknown.
The UFOs, the out-of-body experiences, so-called hauntings, poltergeist activity, remote viewing. All of these events have been going on for many years now. I first met Robert when I first heard about him when he was 16 back in the mid-90s. I met him when he was 18 in 98. And these events have been going on in his life since he was about really 4 years old, when he first started to have very unusual experiences as a child. Over the years, these events have become more numerous, more dramatic,
more
encompassing.
What kind of events in particular?
The crop circles, the reason I'm most interested in him really, though, was that he is the only person, as far as we know, who knows when and where crop circles in his area are occurring. As they are occurring, he is aware of it.
Right. Well,
and
do you realize if you can pull all this together?
He will have a very clear impression, usually, as to exactly where, and also what it's going to look like, the formation itself.
He knows, and he can also project images onto digital cameras. That's also on your BLT research website. But I want to say, if Robert is the key to tying in UFOs, crop circles, out-of-body experiences, remote viewing, all the things that actually I've been studying on New Realities, if he has that kind of Rosetta Stone, that connection for all, this is a major breakthrough for consciousness on the planet. So
I think it may very well be, Alan. It's not obviously entirely clear yet, but I've known Robert well now for 10 years. I've spent several weeks with him every year, sometimes more than that, and I have observed all of these situations personally, and there's a huge library of events. I mean, there's a lot of documentation in this case, not just mine. And it appears that he is a conduit. In Holland, he is known now as a medium of considerable ability. And it is through him. Now, whether he is actually projecting, as you said, these photos, for people who are listening, I would suggest that they go to this website. It's bltresearch.com/Robert, spelled with two B's. That's robert.php. And on that page, there's an introduction with some of the background about him and some of this early information. But then as you scroll down to the bottom, you will see multiple reports, including many of these strange photographs that he takes and all sorts of other incidents. It really takes a bit of time to get up to speed because so much has been going on and for so long now that you cannot cover it in an hour, you know.
Well, let's talk about, Robert's not your typical person. I mean, he is quite an unusual being. I mean, I think he could be the next evolution of humanity. He has somehow opened up a facility of his mind to tap into a greater reality. Can you describe what it's like, what he's like as a person?
Well, he's funny. He's very normal. I mean, very much like everybody else in many respects. Very smart, funny as he can be upon occasion when he's so moved. But he's very serious about what he believes to be the spiritual aspect of these phenomena that go on around him. He takes very seriously his responsibility, particularly in the as he's developed into a healer, and he does many things, they call them readings in Europe, where people come to him because they have questions, often about relatives or loved ones who have died, or about their health, or romantic matters, or financial matters. They come to him for all sorts of things, and over the years, he's become fairly well known in Holland as a fairly accomplished medium. Well, now, when anyone surfaces who is as unusual as Robert is, who has these unusual talents and capabilities, of course, they also attract absolutely massive, you know, attacks. There are a lot of people who either are not willing to consider that these situations could possibly be real, or they perhaps suspect that they're real and don't like what they think that might suggest. Well, and so he has to deal with a great deal of debunking every time he sticks his nose out in the public arena. And it's now also happening to me because I'm determined to present the information that I personally have. And so, of course, I'm getting attacked, too.
There's always going to be people that will attack those that have seen, you know, a further horizon. On this program, let's just go for it. I want to really dive into the research and not defend it, because for me, it doesn't need defending. I've been to the crop circles. I felt the energies there. I know they're real, most of them, the ones I've been to. And so I really want to go deeper. You know, if you're always, if people are attacking, and so you've only reached one level, but let's go as deep as we can into the research and into the situation to really, for those who know, really open up new doorways for them.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, I mean, from my personal experience of him is that he is a medium. This the best word that I would know of. He consistently has stated for many years now that he's aware of when these unusual events begin to unfold. he becomes aware of what he sometimes describes as an energy. Sometimes he describes it as a presence. Other times he simply describes it as love, pure love. But the experience of this is very intense for him and quite specific. The energies are apparently slightly different depending upon the type of event that is unfolding. In some cases, in the last few years, he has been very specifically calling these energies a Mary energy. And here he means the Virgin Mary. Now, he himself is not formally religious, but what he means by that is the sweetness, the tenderness that one would assume would be related to the Virgin Mary. He also describes sometimes very specifically what he calls as a UFO energy, which I gather is, it's not that it's stronger, it is
it's less
perhaps a little more strident, not quite so tender perhaps.
It's less about love, would you say? The UFO energy is more about communication as opposed to love? Would you perhaps.
I have tried to, remember, he speaks Dutch primarily, and I speak English primarily, and although we do communicate pretty well, there are some times when I'm not certain I understand exactly, and I also think he doesn't always have the words. He doesn't quite know, in Dutch I don't think, exactly what to call it, you know? It's something he doesn't always have identified. But he is consistent in saying that the source of this energy, or the source of the presence, is of a spiritual nature. Not the standard sort of ET type situation. When it's UFOs, that's not what he's talking about. The sort of Whitley Strieber little gray ET is not the presence that he feels.
And for the, are you talking about crop circles are a spiritual nature as well?
He believes they are, yes.
And when you said before there's a sort of responsibility he feels, a spiritual responsibility, what does that mean exactly?
To do whatever he can to help anyone who will pay attention become more and more aware of this potential of love in our lives, the spiritual love of the Almighty in our lives. And he thinks that most of the crop circles are not so much specific information, although some of them may encode specific information, that more they are sort of a present, a wake-up call, you know, something that will help many people start to realize that there's more to reality than what the science, the scientific community could tell us. In other words, the reality is greater than the material expression of it.
I see. So the specific designs aren't as important as the presence that they present to us. Is that what you're
Correct.
Saying?
Correct. And he also, in the last couple of years, has reported on this, on his website, on his page, on the BLT website, there's one report called the Woodenhead Report, and it's about a number of circles which occurred in a field which loosely translates into Woodenhead. And in that situation, and in several others. And in fact, this year, where all the UFO photos were taken, they were taken in crop circle fields this last summer, most of them. He said that he felt, when he went into the circles, that they had occurred in these specific places to also energize the earth, to somehow or other, I don't know exactly if it's awaken or reawaken some sort of earth spirit or earth energy, but he seems to feel that some of them are very specifically occurring and in precise locations for that purpose.
So
I think
so
it would go,
there's
sort of like the ley line concept, you know?
Is that why they're all around Avebury and Wiltshire, because there's perhaps a direct energetic connection to kind of a higher frequency of the Earth?
I think it is something he would probably say yes. Wherever they occur, in whatever location, in whatever country, and you know they do occur, as best we can tell. I mean, I don't have actually contact with China, but I have contacts all over South America and in Africa and all over Europe and in Russia and in Poland and in the Scandinavian countries and, you know, Canada and here in the U.S. And in all of those countries, of course, crop circles occur with varying regularity, but they do occur. And apparently, in the majority of these cases, the ones that are genuine rather than the man-made ones, are often placed in locations for this purpose, to help re-energize or perhaps open, I think of it sometimes like blocked arteries in a person's body, you know, that
right.
The crop circles may come in places where the energies need to be unblocked.
For the whole, for the planet as a whole. Well,
yes.
Let's talk about these snow formations that occurred in Holland December 19, 2009. They're very unusual formations because they don't have the symmetries of the normal, of the average ones in Wiltshire, but there's something strange about them. Can you talk a little bit about them?
I'd love to. One of the major points I wanted to make, because it is something that is misunderstood all over the crop circle world, everywhere where people know about crop circles, there are certain bits of misinformation that they have, and it happened to be applicable here. The idea that crop circles, in order to be genuine, must be geometrically perfect is absolutely false, at least based on the scientific work that we carried out during the 1990s, which showed us certain changes, physical changes in the plants and soils in the genuine crop circles. And we discovered that, yes, when some of the crop circles, which are very geometric and elegant, do in fact show these changes, but also, particularly here in the United States and in Canada, we found, and also in Germany, we found that some of those circles, which were not so elegant, which were not so geometrically perfect, and this is also true in Holland because we've, of course, tested the circles there also, and we found that this geometric perfection is not one of the criteria by which you decide that a crop circle is the real McCoy. They can be somewhat ungainly. They can also be non-geometric totally. There have been many cases where we have sampled downed crop, particularly in a field where there already was a crop circle, a geometric one, and we find the same changes often in these totally randomly downed areas that are associated with the genuine crop circles which are in fact more geometric.
Well, why don't you just go over, because you've done the research, what you feel makes a crop circle a genuine, non-man-made, whoever, crop circle, you know, whoever
okay.
makes it. Yeah,
I base my decisions about them entirely on the scientific work, and that work clearly shows that there is something called apical node elongation. These are the knuckle-like protuberances on the stems of the plants, on wheat, oats, barley, rye, and there usually are 3, 4, 5 of these knuckle-like things up and down the stem. The top one is called the apical node. It's just beneath the seed head. And that node, consistently in the genuine article, is elongated. It is stretched longer than the control nodes in the rest of the field. Furthermore, there are often, not always, but often, what we call expulsion cavities in the nodes farther down the plant stem. This would be the second node, the third node, the fourth node.
Like holes.
Both of those results are caused by heating, very brief, very intense heating of the moisture inside those plant stems. The moisture turns to steam. The steam then, of course, has to escape. Farther up the nodes, farther up the stem at the top, it's where the tissues are elastic. They stretch very easily. And as the steam expands, it literally stretches the node and seeps out. Farther down the plant stem, the fibers are very tough. They're not elastic. They do not stretch. And so as the steam builds up, it simply blows a hole out at these lower nodes.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two very reliable indicators that the formation is genuine. In addition, there are growth abnormalities in the seeds taken from crop circle plants. And all of this work, just so people are aware, involves not just samples, and we're talking hundreds of samples, taken from the circle itself. We take an equal number or close to equal number of control plants taken at a considerable distance away from the formation, but in the same field. And then the changes, what we're looking for are changes between that control group and the sample group.
Right. If the plant doesn't have elongated nodes, that generally you would consider it a man-made crop circle then, right?
Well, we never, in all the years we were doing the science, we never took one change as an absolutely authoritative, indicator. We looked at multiple things. Elongation of the apical node, expulsion cavities farther down the plant stem, growth abnormalities of the seeds. This requires growing the seeds in the laboratory along with control seeds and then comparing what we find. When crop circles occur in young crop, before the seed is formed, this would be in May and June. Seeds, when germinated in the laboratory, from a crop circle done at that time, those seeds won't grow. They simply will not germinate properly, and if you tried to use them to reseed a field, you would not get a viable crop. In other words, they've been sterilized. Right. However, when the crop circle occurs later in the season, this would be mid-July and August, at least in the Northern Hemisphere. In those cases, when the crop circles occur then, what's happened is the seed, you see, is fully formed when the crop circle occurs. And those seeds, although they will be dehydrated and they weigh less than the controls, when you grow them out under laboratory conditions, you find that they grow at up to 5 times the rate of normal. They produce greater yield, and they'll do it without water or sunlight for long periods of time.
Wow, that's amazing, isn't it?
It's bloody amazing.
Yeah.
Now, in addition to these changes, there's some microscopic work that we also have done. There are certain changes in the cell wall pits. We also have done quite a bit of soil work, and we discovered that there is, in the real McCoy, usually, there are deposits of microscopic spheres of pure iron, which are magnetized. And not only are they present in the soil, they're distributed in terribly interesting manners. Sometimes they're collected all around the perimeter of the circle. Sometimes they're congealed right in the middle of the circle, in the center. And sometimes they're literally, it's amazing, they're distributed in the soils in a linear fashion so that you have the littlest amount at the center, and then when you sample 5 feet away from the center and 5 feet more and 5 feet more and 5 feet more out to the edge, you see, the perimeter, what you find is this linear increase in the amount of the material. Now, when you remember that it is microscopic, it's tiny.
Right.
It's perfectly spherical. It's magnetized. There is no way on the face of the earth that direct, human involvement has caused that. This is some sort of a rotating delivery system which it obviously involves a magnetized source of some sort, depositing these tiny, tiny, tiny particles. And the way we find this is that we take these soil samples all at the center, and then we'll draw a ring around the center at, say, 5 feet out, take multiple samples there. Then we go another 5 feet out and draw another ring. This is, you know, just on a diagram, and again take samples. And you have to go through all of those and compare them to all the control soil, because we go way out into the field. And you have to sift out these particles, get them extracted first, then you weigh them compared to, you know, the total weight of the soil, so that you can figure out precisely the amount that was contained in each soil sample. Mm. And it's fascinating what we find. I mean, it's absolutely intriguing.
The other thing I think was that you said that sometimes the circles appear on ground that's uneven, so they may look circular from above, but actually on the ground they have to be adjusted. Is that your research who pointed that out?
Well, we have talked about it. There are many instances of multiple circles, you know, on the ground. And of course, what most people see, what most people know, is simply aerial photographs. And you can't tell from an aerial photograph 9 times out of 10 whether the land beneath was flat or not. It's not obvious necessarily. But when you get on the ground, particularly in England, you'll find that the actual land is sloping or it's undulating. And in order for something to look circular on a slope, say, you've got to have actually on the ground an ellipse. And the degree of the ellipse has to be exactly the same as the degree of the slope in order to produce the direct, you know, circular thing from directly overhead.
That's amazing, isn't that, when you think about that?
You know? It blows my mind when I think about it, because it means that whatever is doing a circle in that situation has to be directly overhead, projecting directly downward. And the nature of the land beneath then has everything to do with the actual measurements on the ground.
Mm.
So if you've got a 35-degree slope, you're going to have an ellipse that's 35 degrees off if it's going to look circular from the air.
Wow, that's fantastic.
There are many, many, many subtleties to the whole crop circle phenomenon that are generally not understood by the public. Some of it, there are nuances that it really takes quite a bit of effort to understand some of them in order to take into consideration all of these details when you're trying to evaluate whether or not a formation, a crop circle, is the real McCoy or a man-made event. There are many ways to narrow down that question. I don't think I could be 100% certain in every case, but we would find generally when we were working, doing this all the time, that there would be two or three of these parameters that we look for would be present in the formations that we believe to be genuine. And they would not be present in the ones that we thought were mechanically created.
Right. Okay, now let's get back to December 17th, actually, of this year, of last little year that just passed, in Holland, in the snow. Give a lead up to what happened and what made Robert aware of these circles.
Okay, he and I do talk on the phone quite a bit, and I had just called him just, you know, for the heck of it, on the night of December 17th, and we had a long conversation about a number of things. And toward the end, he said, as he has this curious way of saying this, he just sort of offhandedly mentioned that he thought, he had this feeling that some circles were getting ready to occur. Now, if you didn't know Robert, and if you hadn't spent time with him, you probably wouldn't really necessarily pay attention to that. But I've learned over all these years, there's a certain tone of voice he gets when he's describing something that then occurs. And I heard it in his voice, and so I was thinking, something's getting ready to happen, because I can tell from the tone of voice he gets. Well, then I guess it was on the next night, the very next night, around midnight, this thing that happens, this very strong sense that he gets, came on him. And not only did he have this feeling very strongly that something was happening, he had the very clear impression that it was happening at a specific field not too far from his home, where many, many events have occurred over the years. He calls it his special field because it's really where many of these things started to happen back when he was 13, 14 years old. And so what he did, he does not go into the fields alone at night. The reason is that he has been accused of making crop circles, and he feels that it is not helpful for him to go, because if one of the farmers saw him, they might think that he had done it, you see. And so what he does instead is he has a number of people he can call, and there's one woman in particular who's a friend of his mother's who has a car. Robert does not have a car and does not drive a car. And so when it's real cold like this, to have a car is very helpful. And he calls Ellen to see if she's willing to take him to whatever field he thinks they should go to. And he called her, and she was available, and so off they went. And apparently they arrived at the field around 1 o'clock in the morning, which would make it, you know, actually Saturday the 19th. And Robert said that he immediately felt, as he stepped out of the car, a very still, very peaceful feeling that the best word that he could come up with really was that it was a holy feeling. He was awed. He felt totally awed. And
is that unusual for him, that feeling, or is that a feeling he's around a lot?
It happens around the circles, not always.
Okay.
But this particular one, that was the feeling he had that night. And he said as they got out of the car, he also heard what sounded like female voices singing very sweetly. And he was searching for the word choir in English because he didn't know it. And I offered it up. He said, yes, yes, it sounded like a choir of angels because it was so sweet. Ellen did not hear this. Robert was the only person who did. And as they got out of the car and walked to along the edge of the dike, they could see these rings, which are in the snow formation report. If people are on the website, that's the report they should be looking at now.
Right. That's BLTResearch.com/Robert2B/snow, right?
I think it is, yes, snow. Or just get to Robert's page, scroll down to the bottom, and it's the first report there. It says snow formations.
Right, and great picture, yes.
These rings are, you know, they could see them. Now, he further told me it was very cold. He doesn't like the cold and would never spend a great deal of time out in this sort of weather because he really doesn't like it. But he had the feeling as they stayed for a while, they walked down to the very edge of this, but he didn't go out into the field, partly because of the coldness, but also because he had the feeling that it was still happening, that more circles, in other words, what was there that night, he believes was not all that was there the next morning. He called when he got home one of another member of the team in Holland, this Roy Boschman, who is turning into a really wonderful field worker. And he called Roy right away to tell him. Roy came the next day and began doing the very best job he could to photograph this before it either snowed again or, you know, the weather got warm or something, and they all melted. And these pictures we have were all taken by Roy that next morning. Now, one of the things that I have heard people are suggesting could have happened is that Robert or somebody could have gone out into this field before the snow happened and taken antifreeze or salt or whatever and put it all over this field in these rings and circles, and then waited for the snow to come to make the crop circle. And I think, okay, that's kind of ingenious. I mean, I know Robert would never go to the trouble to do that, but maybe somebody could have. Well, if that were so, you would expect then that the snow that fell subsequently would melt as it hit these areas, yes?
Right.
And yet when you look at the close-up photos, you clearly see, remember, it's a minus 10 degree C weather. If there were any melting going on at all, you'd see ice. Mm. And there's no ice at all.
Oh, so wait, explain that again, because
the concept was antifreeze that made these circles. And the snow, because we see no centers in any of these circles, that's a good point.
There's no center point where a radius of a circle could have been made from, and they are pretty perfectly circular, it seems.
Most of them. So that's one point. Secondly, there is, if you look very carefully at the pictures we have, the close-ups, you will see that the snow is not removed all the way down to the ground. There is a good inch and a half of snow beneath the bottoms of these rings.
Now, if people were walking with their feet,
they'd have squashed it right down to the ground, and you'd probably see footprints, none of which, of course, do we see. So then some of the people thinking about this, trying to figure out how it could have been done, came up with this idea that someone had been out in the field before it snowed and had taken salt, the kind that you put on the roads when they're icy.
Right.
Or antifreeze or some other substance. There were a whole variety of things they came up with, and had very carefully poured this around in all of these rings so that when it did snow, this ringed event would then appear.
Mm.
And I thought that was pretty creative. The problem is there's absolutely no evidence that even vaguely fits with that scenario. Not to mention the fact that Robert would never bother to go out in the freezing cold and do something like this.
Right. But that might explain, or that's one reason might explain, because when the snow has melted, these rings still seem to be present. But that could also be from whatever energy that made the rings. Is that true? The rings are still there even after the snow's melted?
Absolutely. Roy has gone back now several times and re-photographed. This is what good field work is all about. You don't do it just once. He's documenting the dickens out of this. And when he went back 8 or 9 days after, he clearly saw what looks like a fairly normal crop circle in the field. Now, people, if they don't know Robert and they don't know the situation, there's no way they can know all of these facts. And I try like crazy to remember to put all of the pertinent facts in each report, but I'm sure I miss some. Robert visits this area frequently. It's a favorite space of his. In many, many of the events which have occurred, he will have been in the general area within a day or so of whatever the new event is. So he knows whether there's anything there. Furthermore, he has this strong awareness that something is happening that only occurs when something is happening. It has never been so far that he has had this feeling and nothing happened. It seems to be a very accurate knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only thing I can suggest for people, I understand why they have all the questions. They don't know him. So a lot of them don't know me. Mm-hmm. This is a quite impressive situation, these circles in snow. They're very large. They're fairly complex. And people don't want to be fooled. They don't want to be thinking that this is the real McCoy if it isn't. And I completely understand them having the questions. All I can suggest is that people become better aware of all of the events going on around Robert, not just these snow circles. Read all of these other reports, because you really need to start knowing more about the mammoth number of events. They're constant. I mean, this is a daily or weekly situation with him and has been for his whole life. He's almost 30 now, and this has been going on at least for 15 years.
Has he been over to Wiltshire to see the English crop circles and get a feeling for those?
He can tell about them just by looking at pictures. very much the way he can do readings for people simply by looking at their photograph. He doesn't have to be there at all. And he feels that the events which are happening around him, and in particular these circles, that it is his job not to concern himself with England or any other country at this moment. It is, he's supposed to be where he is. This is happening where he is for some reason, although he doesn't completely understand what that is. But I think he feels a strong commitment to trying to help the Dutch people get with the program, so to speak.
I see.
You know, begin to understand that this stuff is real. Mm-hmm. That it is, that he's not making it up. He doesn't claim to understand exactly what it means. He doesn't claim to understand where it's going. He just is convinced, and I can see every reason why he is, that it is significant, it's meaningful, and eventually a much clearer meaning will become evident, not just to him, but for everybody else.
Because these circles, actually, the ones in Holland in the snow, look, have a different feeling, a different vibratory emanation than the ones that have occurred in England, as if there was a different being creating these. That's my impression of these new
circles.
We've
talked about that. Other people have had the same sort of impression, and Robert thinks it's entirely possible that, I mean, this situation around him, the energies around him, he is certain are of a very positive and totally spiritual nature. But he is entirely aware that it's possible that there are other energies, other consciousnesses, other perhaps entities that also make crop circles, and that the ones in the UK, or some of the ones in the UK, are made by a different entity or group.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he doesn't know for sure. He did have an encounter. I haven't written this up yet, although it was made partially public in Holland years ago. He stays up all night, and he sleeps a good part of the day. One night, he was up, the rest of his family asleep, and he was downstairs in the living room, and he saw with his eyes, this is not an impression, this is something he actually saw, this smoky mist starting to appear. That we have many, many photographs of this. It occurs in crop circle fields. It occurs in his house. It occurs in many places where he goes, where you will see it on the camera, but you can't see it with your eyes.
Right.
And in this case, he saw it with his eyes. And it was coalescing slowly. Now, Robert at that time did not smoke. No one else in the house did. There was nobody else up. It was just Robert. And this mist, this white smoky mist stuff, became more and more coalesced, and it started to take on a shape, a form. And he had a camera, and he apparently asked whatever this was, if it would be okay if he took photographs. And I guess he got a yes, because he started taking photographs. And he did, over the next 63 minutes, he took many, many photographs as this thing coalesced into a shape, a recognizable, essentially ET-looking shape. In fact, it was sitting in, when it ended up, it was sitting in a chair right next to the telephone downstairs, and it was fully formed at that point. And there are pictures I have that show this thing as it evolves very slowly into this shape. Now, in this case, it was not the sort of Whitley Strieber type ET. This was a being with a large head, the big black eyes, but the head was long rather than wide. The neck was very long and thin. The body was moderately well-developed. You could see the arms and down to about the knees in most of the pictures Robert took. Mm-hmm. And he told me that the being was communicating with him, and among the things that were communicated was the fact that they, this creature, and I guess others like it, were making the crop circles. Now, Robert didn't think to ask it, did that mean all of the crop circles, or did it just mean the crop circles around him? So he doesn't know.
Do you have a picture of that being on your website? I'd love to see that little creature.
I haven't written this up. It's going to be in the book that I'm working on in English for Robert, because there's so much stuff that needs to be put out so people can get the whole picture. And a lot of it is on the website right now, but there's a lot more. And that whole series is a very important series of photographs. And so I'm going to put them in the book. But yes, in the final shot, this is a very clear entity. And Robert told me when we were talking about it later that it leaned toward him in the chair. And when it did, he could see the wrinkles in its stomach.
Wow.
I mean, that's a fascinating observation.
This is very exciting times I think we're heading into. Does he have any predictions for the upcoming crop circle season or predictions in general about what's going to happen on the planet and all that? What is he saying,
no,
Robert?
He doesn't do that, at least not yet. Mm-hmm. And mostly he has been focusing an awful lot of his energy in the last couple of years on developing these abilities to heal. He's getting better and stronger, I guess would be the way to put it at that. There are many people who come to him for healings. He is also, the next report I will be putting out about him will be about the people who have died. He takes very clear, almost portrait-like photographs of his clients, deceased relatives or loved ones, and in fact many other people, not just his clients, people related to his clients. But a couple of years ago, he did this when my own brother had died. Now, Robert had never met my own brother.
Know what he looked like, did he?
No. Uh-huh. And yet, when I arrived that year, only 2 months after Bill had died, Robert told me that he thought that my brother was going to appear, and I really wasn't up for it. I just wasn't up for it. And I told him that. I said, no, I hope that doesn't happen. Well, he was telling me because apparently he knew it was going to happen and he wanted to get me prepared. And the very next day we went into the fields for the first time, when I arrived that year. And it was in the middle of the afternoon. And we went into the field. My camera was in my case, kept on my body. He has no access to it whatsoever until I hand it to him. And we walked into the field, and he said that Bill was there, and asked if he could have my camera. And I took it out of the case, and I handed it to him, and I stood right with him. And he took some 60 shots right in a row of my brother's face in broad daylight.
Well, you didn't see your brother, but they appeared on the camera. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Uh-huh. That's
very clear. These are not vague, ghostly-like things. I mean, it's my brother.
That's phenomenal. Did you freak out? I mean, that
will be in this report.
That's remarkable. What was your feeling about that?
I wish I could tell people. I don't really know. I know Robert so well, I was not at all surprised.
But it's
shocking. I was
shocking.
Still dealing with just getting used to the idea that Bill had died.
Right.
I think the thing that struck me most, and this is the strangest part of it, I had not known my brother for many years. He was a traveler, and he had been living out on the island of Palau in the Pacific for years. I hadn't seen him in years. And frankly, some of his attitudes about women made me think he was kind of a Neanderthal. We didn't share a great deal as adults. We had been very close as children. But when he died very quickly and unexpectedly, and I had this desire to, after he died, go to the ocean somewhere, because my brother loved the ocean, and play some of the Beach Boys music. You remember the Beach Boys?
Yeah, I love the Beach Boys.
Well, my brother, they were my brother's favorite music. And so I just wanted to go down to the beach somewhere, some night by myself, with a Beach Boys record, put it on the car, you know, the stereo, open the doors and play it for him. And I hadn't had time to do it by the time I got to Holland. And so after that first night in the field with his face appearing over and over, I thought, well, maybe I should do it here. And so I went into town the next day and I got a Beach Boys album and we went back to that same field the following night with the music this time. And I put it on the turntable. Now, these first photographs, I have to make one point about them. My brother's left ear in the first 60 photographs is sticking out in an abnormal way. It is not the way my brother's ears looked. And I noticed it, but I didn't put two and two together. I didn't make much of it. Well, when we came back the next night with the music, I put it on and I opened the car doors and I cranked it the whole way, and out comes the Beach Boys blasting through this field. Robert immediately told me again that Bill was there, and again he asked for the camera. And I got it out, I gave it to him, and he took a number of other photos, only about 10 the second time. But in those 10 photographs, my brother's ear is now normal.
Huh. Did his face look the same as it did the day before?
Exactly.
Exactly the same picture of his face. But his...
Exactly. Only the ear was different.
That is just so creepy in a way, you know, but it's fascinating.
Actually, what I felt, what I'm almost certain this has to mean, because it's the only way I can understand it. My brother's, I know my, you know, the kind of attitude my brother had toward me, and I think what he was saying, well, the love of God, go get the damn record and play it. He knew I wanted to play it to say goodbye to him.
Right.
And his appearing and that ear sticking out in that funny way was the only thing that he could do, or his spirit could do, to tell me, go get, because that hadn't occurred to me. I literally, it occurred to me completely spontaneously the next morning to go get the music. It was
right.
not
no,
in my mind.
Right, no, it's fascinating. I mean, it means that the veils between these worlds, I mean, Robert's showing us is not as, you know, separate as we think, for one thing. I mean, Robert seems to really be pulling, like we said in the beginning of the show, everything together, and still more and more is unfolding to him. We sort of have to wrap up soon, but what can we expect from Robert, and are you going to put those pictures of your brother up on your website soon?
Yeah, the next report is going to be another one of these huge, long things, with many, many, many examples of these dead people reappearing on not just my camera, but other cameras. Dr. William Roll, the American parapsychologist, knows all about Robert and did come to spend some time with him and me in 2008. And during that visit, Robert used Dr. Roll's camera entirely. And on Dr. Roll's camera, not only did the UFOs appear, but there were multiple male faces, quite clear, of people who apparently have died. I thought in that case that maybe Dr. Roll would know who they were, but he didn't. And in that case, Robert didn't recognize them, and neither did I. I don't know who some of these people are. But some of them, I have tracked them down. We have identified photographs that may be very similar to some of these images, but we've done an analysis of a lot of these and are able to demonstrate that the images which have appeared on the cameras subsequent to the individual's death are not precisely the same images that we have in the cases where we have found images that were very similar. They are similar, but not the same. And
they're not the same image of the person you're saying?
What?
They're similar to the person, but not exactly the same image of the person?
We're talking about instances in which there was an existing photograph of the individual.
I see. So it's similar to an existing photograph, but a little... Yes, because Robert's...
And when you compare the existing photograph to the images that actually appeared on the camera, They are not precisely the same.
I get
It's taken quite a bit of work for us to show this, but that's what this report is all about, clearly illustrating this, as if what is coming on the camera when Robert uses it is the same individual at the same basic period of time that the photographic image was taken, but at a slightly different moment in time.
Right, and those photographs do not exist anywhere. We sort of have to start to wrap it up, but what can we expect from Robert? Are you going back there this summer? And what would be a message Robert would like to give, if you could tune in somehow, to the world?
He would tell people that that reality is much larger than we currently, most of us, know, that it is filled with love, filled with hope, that we, each of us human creatures, is enormously more capable, enormously more able to have awareness beyond what we currently do, and that listening to the very quietest, the most still things, the very first quiet impulse you get in any situation is always the closer to the truth, if not exactly the truth, than what our busy minds end up telling us later on.
Mm. Nancy, thank you so much for your work and everything you're doing to bridge consciousness to higher levels of reality. I've been talking to Nancy Talbert. That's BLTResearch.com. And expect more reports on her. Look at her website and look at for the section with Robert, particularly because he has a lot of new original roads to consciousness. Any final words?
Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much for having me. Robert and I are both very grateful.
Well, I'm hoping to meet him at some point, and thank you again. This is Alan.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon, Nancy. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check my website, newrealities.com. Thank you for listening.